The Athletic.
Peter, you've added nothing.
Cut and dried. Day 9 at the World Cup sees another two sides through, Portugal and Brazil, plus a game of the tournament contender in Cameroon-Serbia, and the week's biggest career comeback that didn't involve eating bits of camel, courtesy of Ghana. We'll be talking all of that, plus Tuesday's final games in Groups A and B, with Iran taking on one of their biggest enemies, and then after Jurgen Klinsmann, USA, and England against Wales. It's Totally at the World Cup, sponsored by LiveScoreBet. Hey, listener, thank you so much for joining us. It's Totally at the World Cup. Day 9 we've just had in Qatar. Duncan Alexander's here. Hey, Duncan.
Hello.
All right. Sasha Gurinov's in as well.
Hello, James.
With your big book of notes, Sash.
There.
I have to warn you, listener, it's a big book of notes. We're also going to be hearing from Sam Staiskull and also Basil McDaddy on one of the big games coming up on Tuesday. Karl Anka will be erupting into the studio as well as soon as we mention G-H-A-N-A. Sasha, what's your moment of the day?
I was thinking about my moment, and I'd say 100 minutes of Aleksandar Mitrovic passed like a moment for me.
Oh, yeah?
What a performance. Just loved everything that he did today. His work today was fantastic. So my moment is 100 minutes of Mitrovic.
All right. A little bit of artistic license there. What's your stat of the day, Duncan?
Well, we've all sat through a lot of 10 o'clock time slots at this World Cup with not that much action. And then today, Cameroon-Serbia was an all-time classic. 43% of all the goals scored in the early game came in this one today, the last one of the lot as well. I was kind of looking forward to that time slot disappearing, but now I'm quite sad and I want it back. It was also the first day with multiple five-goal games at the World Cup since 1990.
Which is extraordinary, because that's a tournament that's famous for being low scoring.
Mm.
Crazy. Hey, you like stats. How about this one? Two games in, Brazil still haven't faced a shot on target. Ecuador have only faced one, and that was actually a goal. It went in. So two matches into this tournament, you could say that both Alisson and Hernan Galindez, the Ecuador keeper, are yet to make a save. That's remarkable, isn't it? Anyway, let's hear about Monday's results. This was Group H and Group G. Your favourite groups, I believe, in this World Cup, Duncan. Is that right? Yeah?
Yeah.
Group G, that brought us that extraordinary 3-3 draw you were mentioning. Cameroon and Serbia there. Possibly game of the tournament so far. A little bit later on, and a little bit less action-packed, was Brazil's 1-0 victory over Switzerland. Casemiro, a fine goal there, and one that puts the Seleção through to the last 16. In Group H, there was a big, big, big win for Ghana, and Portugal were 2-0 winners over Uruguay.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Portugal, Uruguay, two goals. The first, was it Ronaldo or was it Bruno?
Well, it was given to both players at various points. Ronaldo certainly celebrated like it was his, but there was no change to the spin of the ball.
So Bruno had...
He was out wide on the left flank, crossed it in right-footed. Ronaldo leapt, as is his style, nodded his head. A bit like Alan Smith for Arsenal against Liverpool in the famous game in 1989. Did he get a touch? We don't know, but he celebrated like he did. FIFA gave him the goal, then took it away. And I think my favourite thing about it is that because Bruno then scored another one from the penalty spot after Ronaldo had been substituted, Portugal's top scorer at this World Cup is a Manchester United player, like many people theorised.
I thought you were going to say that after he got his second, Ali McCoy suggested that now he's got his goal, they might as well give the other one to Ronaldo. And then Bruno Fernandes hit the post.
Yeah, so if he's given the other goal to Ronaldo in an act of kindness, then if he's on for a hat-trick, does he then take it back? And can you just give goal? Why not give it to Eusebio?
Apparently you can.
Yeah.
Ronaldo, who was substituted off to a hail of boos, really, at the Luzal Stadium. I'm not sure if they were intended for him or Fernando Santos, more probably. What else did he contribute to the game?
He did a nice little bit of skill with his shoulder.
Yes.
Which was okay. He had a free kick, which went nowhere near the goal. That's now 53 at World Cups and Euros, with one goal, obviously the famous one against Spain in the last World Cup. But yeah, 53, not a great ratio. He's playing okay, but they kind of do look a little bit better when he kind of goes off. So,
who looked good for Uruguay?
I tell you, Uruguay look a lot better when Georgian Derrascaeta is on the pitch. He's a midfielder for Flamengo. There have been question marks raised as to why he didn't play in the first game. It's mystifying to me why he didn't start this match. As soon as he came on, there was certain idea, certain progression to that excellent Uruguay midfield, certain connection with the strikers. And then he was popping up everywhere. Really active performance. Three on goal, though. What was that finish?
Yeah, don't hit the table too much, Castro. I understand the emotion of it. Yeah, if you're looking out for him in perhaps the next Uruguay game, he's the blonde fellow. And what position does he play? All of them.
Number 10, everywhere.
Right. Oh, everywhere. Okay. That name again, Sash?
Georgian Derrascaeta.
It's a thing of beauty, isn't it? Bruno Fernandes' second goal, by the way, coming from the penalty spot and a controversial spot kick, Sash.
Yeah, because in that situation, I think with Jimenez, what is he supposed to do with his arm on which he's falling?
So it was a handball.
Handball through his legs. He's falling on it.
You were saying that there's been some kind of word that the VAR team
I think there are some opinions that this is the sort of call that VAR basically made an incorrect call, as this is a natural position.
I mean, he could have just sat down, might have damaged his coccyx.
Or his perineum.
Well, it was the Clásico de perineum, wasn't it? Because in the first half, arguably one of Uruguay's best chances, Betancur shot.
He's kind of slalomed through using his sexy old-school black boots.
Black boots, yeah.
Which kind of bamboozled the defenders. Like, what is this flurry of darkness? And weaved his way through, but then shot, and Portugal's keeper just sat on it.
Sat on it like a huge egg.
Space hopper.
Yeah. So in many ways, the perineum was the key zone of this.
Pair of goals is how it finished anyway for Portugal. It leaves the group very nicely for Portugal. They're not definitely going to be group winners yet, but they are mathematically through to the last 16 on 6 points. Uruguay only have one, alongside South Korea. And in second place, Ghana, the team that Uruguay are going to be facing next. Wow, that's going to be quite a matchup. Anyway, speaking of Ghana, 3-2 winners they were today over South Korea. And who's that I hear knocking? Carl Anker.
From what we are hearing outside, we are getting outside. We're taking Ghana for a third goal. Thomas, we are going to see, we are going to catch it right now.
Jordan, are you?
What's going to happen? Gideon Mensah
comes to Inaki Williams, miss kick.
And he scored a six.
All right, listener, here's a treat. It's Carl Anker unexpectedly bursting into the studio shouting, Ghana, Ghana. What a day for you, Carl. A day that began with tension. I imagine you were on 0 points ahead of that clash with South Korea. Defeat would have left you out of the competition. But luckily, what a great start. Jordan Ayew floating a ball in there for Mohamed Salisu. Woof.
Fantastic. Jordan Ayew's name on the starting 11 brought much anxiety among Ghanaian fans, who treat his appearance in the starting 11 as sort of a nepotistic choice.
All right.
But his delivery from wide areas today was mighty impressive, and there's been quite a few written apologies.
Right. Nepotistic because his dad, Abdi Pelé, is part of what the coaching...
Abdi Pelé is not part of the coaching staff, but the story is that if Jordan Ayew wasn't Jordan Ayew, if he was Jordan Anker, so we say, he would be nowhere near the starting 11.
I hear what you're saying. And as you say, how wrong you were, because it wasn't long before, he's whipped in another wonderful cross, this time for Mo Kudus.
Yes, just a fantastic heading move. The movement to get to connect with that was really good. And you just sort of, I think earlier in this tournament, I said Mohamed Kudus is the best attacking player I've seen in the Ghana shirt for about 10 years. And you can really see that now. There was that proposed deal to take him to Everton in the summer, which I'm mildly happy it didn't quite work out. And also now I'm curious as to what Lampard was planning to do with Onana, Iwobi and Kudus, because that would have been a front midfield three.
Questions for another day, Carl, because at this point in today's match, this is 156 minutes into their tournament. South Korea were yet to have a shot on target. But then they try one, they're 2-0 down, they try one, they decide they like it. And they score two goals in the space of 2 minutes 48 seconds. Boom. All of a sudden you're back to 2-2.
Yeah. They really worked into that space in front of Tarik Lamptey, who was struggling at the aggression of the South Korean press and counter-press. The first goal in particular, Lamptey wins the ball, thinks he's safe, and is immediately seized upon by two Korean attackers, and the cross comes in. It's a fantastic cross. And I believe the Korean striker is up the better part of 6 foot two, maybe 6 foot three. He's one of the taller players at the World Cup. And it's a thumping header. Absolutely thumping header. And again, Ghana can see two goals in the better space of 3 minutes as they did against Portugal. And while I wear my Fitbit most of the time, and my heart rate apparently was somewhere around 110 at that point.
110, yeah. Okay. Well, calming your heart rate. Mo Kudus again.
Yes.
After Iñaki Williams had kind of scuffed his attempts at the shot. And then it falls to Kudus and it's 3-2.
Yes, one of the funnier assists I've seen in World Cup football. Iñaki Williams again slipping and Kudus graciously accepting and getting a left-footed shot off. I think what really stands Kudus out is not only his press resistance. Erik ten Hag first saw him at Ajax and then tried moving from a number 10 to a number 8 because he viewed him as really, really press resistant. But also, he's just got a wicked left-footed shot on him. The sky is the limit for him. And I'm sure Edwin van der Sar and other people at Ajax will be shielding phone calls from Premier League clubs in January, if not the summer.
Didn't feel like that was going to be the end of the scoring, though. And when you're hanging on to a lead, a narrow lead, and you see the board go up and it says 10 minutes on it, Carl.
Yes, I made many of the sweary noises that Tom Williams made during Wales's game against the USA. It was it's siege, aerial assault from South Korea. So just putting more balls and more balls and really, really working into that space that Tarik Lamptey was just overwhelmed.
I quite like the fact that they replaced Lamptey with Odoi, who's really old, but he played for the team and now plays in the Belgian League. I don't think he fed any better than Lamptey in closing down that space. It felt a little bit of a desperate move by Ghana. But, you know, when you say, you know, it looked like there were going to be more goals, it felt to me it's also only going to be South Korean goals, because I think the Kudus goal was the only shot on target Ghana had, pretty much the only attack they had in the second half. And I thought what was remarkable, and I just wondered about Ghana perspective, what did Ghana do not react to at halftime? Because it felt to me like South Korea suddenly, the both fullbacks pushed on, made the pitch very wide, and it looked like just Ghana didn't have enough players to cover it, and the gap that was left was on the left, and Kim Jong-soo just basically owned that left flank in the second half.
Yeah, I think that's, if we're seeing something of this Ghana team, they're the youngest squad, and also Otto Addo is comparatively one of the younger managers in terms of senior games managed in terms of his national team. He's got the playoffs against Nigeria to get to the World Cup, and now he's got the group stages. And I think these quick goals in succession are, he's not quite figured out how to calm heads. You know, this World Cup has, you know, the most impressive teams have seen managers basically say, right, we've got a goal, enough about entertainment, let's make the next 10 minutes close down. Whereas Otto Addo hasn't quite found the way to apply a handbrake to this Ghanaian side, and that's why you're seeing these weird helter-skelter 5 minutes.
10 minutes at the end, pressure, wave after wave of Korean attack, and then right at the end of, 11 minutes, perhaps the most dramatic moment of all, South Korea earn a corner, and Anthony Taylor blows the whistle on that
yes.
end of the game.
Yes, Anthony Taylor, who has he's got a curious reputation in Ghana, because obviously Ghana, huge Premier League watching crowd, massive Chelsea fan base in Ghana, massive Manchester United fan base, massive Liverpool fan base and Spurs fan base. So Anthony Taylor is a known entity in Ghanaian sports discourse. And between that decision to blow before the South Korean corner and the decision to correctly say the Ondra Ayew's ricochet didn't include the first goal to be chalked off, I think Anthony Taylor's bought himself an African Fanta if he ever decides to visit Accra. It was a remarkable close to the game. I think the South Korean coach was sent off.
He was, yeah. Well, they were furious, but I mean, there's no reason why he should have allowed it. They were already a minute past the
minimum. Yeah. They were furious. Okay. Son was in tears, and one of the Ghanaian coaches decided that was a fantastic time to take a selfie with Son, which just felt a bit mean.
Dear me. So where does this leave you? You go on to the match with Uruguay, the final group game, with that place in the last 16 up for grabs. Is there much history to that one? Of course there is. You said, I think, in the preview that winning that game, putting Uruguay out, was more important than qualifying yourselves.
Possibly, because I thoroughly expected Ghana to have no chance of qualifying after two games. I thought, you know, Ghana's 61 ranking in the FIFA ranking and their team being really just really raw would see them lose. But there's been two results now that have been 3-2. Ghana, I didn't know how Ghana would score. goals because their chance creation isn't the best, but they seem to really be maximizing their set pieces. I think up until Kudus's goal, it's something like four. It was, you know, the first four goals were scored off an XG of 1.44, which Ghanaian men aren't necessarily tall. Andre Ayew is 5'9" and yet has a fantastic record in the air as well. So we've got some hops.
Okay.
And it seems like Otto's found a way to dominate one penalty area and hang on for dear life in the other penalty area.
But also have to compliment Ayew's deliveries, those heavy in-swingers, right into the corridor of uncertainty. Horrible to defend. And I think that maybe they also did the homework on the goalkeeper, because goalkeeper should have come for both of the first two goals, and he didn't. And it was basically, the second was a repeat of the first. Guy, dude, you just seen what just happened. He stayed on his line.
There was talk on BBC at halftime about the Korean defensive line for the first goal being far too deep. And okay, the second goal in particular, I think, is just fantastic movement from Kudus. And that is the sort of movement that means he will be playing Champions League football next season, guaranteed, whether it's at Ajax or if he decides to move somewhere else.
Duncan, what do the numbers say about Ghana's chances?
Well, it's one of those games. It'll go down in Ghanaian football history, but they scored with all three of their shots on target. So it was fortunate, but this is World Cup football. And I think, you know, Korea did have so much pressure. They put in 35 open play crosses, which equaled a World Cup record. I don't think you'd probably go back and think maybe South Korea against Ghana would be sort of decided on aerial ability, but it was, really. And there were some great headed goals. So it's not possibly a sustainable thing for Ghana, but it doesn't need to be in a World Cup. That's not how you do well in World Cups. So it's just, you know, along with the Cameroon result, it's the highest scoring African day in World Cup history. So
that's remarkable. Yeah. You just ride your hot streak when you can ride the hot streak, and this is also a World Cup where you can get a real feel for game state and the effect of game state, not only, you know, visibly the players, but you are just seeing these quick goals and quick submission.
But that is an interesting observation, because goals come in twos very often. It feels like maybe five or six times this has happened at this tournament. Duncan, why?
People aren't concentrating. It's too hot.
Maybe. This is perhaps the World Cup for the most, and forgive me because I'm doing this in podcast form, so you can only imagine the gesture, but everyone's sort of tapping their foreheads going switch on.
Right. They're all discombobulated.
There's a lot of that going on from players immediately after scoring and conceding, going switch on, tap your forehead, because that's the...
After South Korea equalised, there was a real sort of proper professional footballers debate on the pitch between the Ghanaians. They were really, like, not just like, oh, who was picking them up, but proper, like, right, we need to do this, and this.
Yep.
And, you know, you can argue it worked in some respects and not in others, but it was, I think we're forgetting that, you know, club teams are so well rehearsed and do so much kind of training and preparing for games that international football is a bit sort of back to basics, isn't it? And everyone's kind of sort of making it up on the fly a little bit.
And I thought that was interesting today with Kim and Cho. Kim putting all those balls in for him. They play for the same club, Jeonbuk, in South Korea. So maybe they actually do have that understanding, as does the other fullback.
Yeah, same with Spain, I suppose, with all the Barcelona. Indeed. Yeah. Nice. Carl, all right, Uruguay on Friday. Have a very happy week in the meantime.
Thank you very much, James.
Next up, listener, let's you and I do some talking about a little group called G.
We're sponsored for this episode of the Totally Football Show by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. It's your perfect teammate, the Sutton to your Shearer, the Heskey to your Owen, the Mane and Firmino to your Salah. Whether you're selling I Belong to Jimbo t-shirts or Max and Barry half and half scars, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to the Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This is the Titanic Football Show, sponsored by LiveScoreBet, the home of squads. Squads is a weekly free-to-play game. You reveal five players across the week which make up your squad, and you can earn cash each time they score in the selected games. The cash amount is decided by LiveScoreBet's prize wheel and can range from 10p up to £50 per goal, which you can spend once the final player is revealed. Find out more and play squads for yourself for free at LiveScoreBet.com or by downloading the LiveScoreBet app on Android and iPhone. It's over 18s only and full terms and conditions apply. Please bet responsibly and be gambleaware.org.
Group G, everybody. Brazil top on 6 points. Switzerland, the team they beat today, 1-0. A second on three. And then you got Cameroon and Serbia with a point apiece. What did you make of Brazil's performance? Big question here was, how are they going to cope without Neymar? And the answer was, up against a pretty tough to break down Switzerland side, not very well.
On the other hand, you could look at it, they went up against a tough Switzerland side and won.
Okay.
1-0. Without, as we could see today, you know, without Neymar, it is difficult. But they did all the playing against a very defensive side. I can't really think of a single chance that Switzerland created. Also, Brazil were up against Serbia, who defended very, very well until they tore them apart. So I think overall, it's a good 6 points for Brazil, to be honest.
Okay. You made a good point about Serbia, their treatment of Neymar and karma. Yeah.
Yes, they tried to kick him out of the game, and they kicked him out of their subsequent games.
Because, so all their rivals.
Yeah, all the rivals that don't get to play against Neymar, and Serbia did, not particularly well, but I thought it was quite interesting. So he got fouled 9 times, he got put out for 2 games. Did you see the stats when Messi caught up with Maradona? In terms of appearances, in those games, the 21 games they played in the World Cup, I think Messi was fouled, say, 60 times. Maradona was fouled 152 times, 7 times a game. So imagine the kicking he received every time he played the major tournament.
I wrote a piece on those very numbers before the World Cup, and it's extraordinary that the three most fouled players in World Cup history in single editions are Maradona 86, followed by Maradona 90, followed by Maradona 82. I mean, it was a different ball game.
It certainly was. Anyway, Neymar, we hope to see him back soon. In the meantime, Brazil basically sticking Fred in the midfield alongside Casemiro and pushing Paquetá up front. It was Casemiro who broke the deadlock against the reassuringly Swiss. And what a wonderful goal it was from Casemiro.
Yeah, I mean, Brazil actually took the lead illegally a bit earlier, Vinicius Junior scoring. But it's one of those. Richarlison was clearly offside, came back, was involved in the move, so VAR called it back correctly, and people were like, well, this is, what's the point? It's like, well, so it was definitely a sort of, we want common sense, not consistency sort of day. But it was a nice finish.
Sometimes we want consistency, Duncan, and other times we don't, you know.
I think what we're learning is people just want football officiated on vibe, so if they feel, you know, that they want this to happen, Brazil to score a sexy goal against the, frankly, you know, quite boring Swiss, then, you know, who are VAR to intervene? But, yeah, you're right, Casemiro's eventual winner, nothing wrong with it, and a lovely volley, actually, a half volley.
Yeah, with the outside of his boot as well.
Added a little bit of extra pace by Akanji's bum. If you actually look at it closely, it goes up Akanji's bum and goes a bit further into the corner away from Zoma.
Right. That'll be Akanji on a scoring streak next up, I'm sure. Brazil through then, the third team to qualify for the knockout stages alongside France and
Portugal.
There you go, Portugal.
Technically, they were the second. They qualified before Portugal.
That's also true. All right. But also in Group G, and a long time before any of this happened, at 10 a.m., as you were referencing earlier, there was an absolutely extraordinary match between Cameroon and Serbia. That's where we're heading next, listener.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is The Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Cameroon and Serbia. So this was the 10 o'clock kickoff, and as it started, both teams were on 0 points. And there was also a bit of pre-game intrigue over the Cameroon keeper, Onana, pretty extrovert exponent of the goalkeeping arts, who apparently had been told by his manager, Rigobert Song, will you stop all that stuff where you go wandering upfield and have 43% of your touches outside the box and do some plain proper net minding? And Onana said,
not on your Nelly, and found himself on a plane home.
If there's one thing that is about World Cups is goalkeepers, outlandish goalkeeping. I mean, Sasha know this as a goalkeeper. Like René Higuita in 1990 was one of the most iconic.
Did his manager tell him, will you stop with this?
I mean, he might have done after that Cameroon game when he got tackled in the centre circle. But, I mean, Onana, I like him. And it's a shame.
Cameroon, obviously, a country of iconic goalkeepers. Mm. In Onana's case, I mean, I can see Rigobert Song was a no-nonsense defender. I mean, it doesn't always translate, but I can sort of see him basically tell his goalkeeper to hoof it. But also, it's kind of on par with usual Cameroon tournament behavior. They do have a lot of noise around their team. And so it was actually surprising. I think is this the first case of a player falling out with the manager of this tournament? It's taken two match days.
He's the first to be on a plane home, I think, Sasha.
And perhaps when he lands, maybe straight on the plane back, because there are rumors that he might be coming back. Oh. Obviously helpful.
A bit like Trevor Sinclair in 2002. He went back and forth to Japan many times.
Very nice. Anyway, he missed out on the game against Serbia, which is a shame, because it was terrific fun, and he might have had a bit of a bearing on it. He was replaced in between the posts by Devis Epassi, who plays his football in Saudi Arabia. He might have had a bearing on this game. A game which saw Serbia hit the post, first of all, but then Cameroon taking the lead, pretty much against the run of play, eh?
Completely. I mean, I thought we saw with Serbia today how they could play when Filip Kostic is there, making the runs down the left, using the width of the pitch. And I think, Živković on the other side, Tadic floating between the lines, really were playing very well. I thought on 10 minutes, just before Mitrovic hit the post to create that chance, he did that very slow dummy, defender slid out the way. I was like, I've seen this before. Obviously, very nicely worked corner for Cameroon. And Serbia took a bit of time to pick themselves up, I thought, after that. But when they picked themselves up, boy, did they pick themselves up.
Pavlovic, a thumping header. And I think the goal celebration of the cup so far.
His first name is obviously Strahinja, which means great terror, obviously terrorizing Cameroon defense at that particular moment.
Seriously, they gave him that name.
That's her parents must have loved him.
Is it after Gordon Strachan?
That's remarkable. But anyway, that made it 1-1, and then your friend Sergei Milinkovic-Savic put Serbia in front not long after.
But it was very cute the way that goal was created, because if you recall, Zambo Anguissa is trying to sort of flick the ball over his head, and he knows he's flicking at around the front player, but Milinkovic-Savic comes around the back because he knows the ball is coming, and Zambo Anguissa doesn't know he's there. So he stole the ball. And the finish was a bit awkward for a goalkeeper, but I think Onana saves that in that particular moment. So I think there you could tell this is a reserve keeper as opposed to a first-team goalkeeper. And at that stage, like, Serbia flying deep into injury time.
Well, yeah, this is the injury time of the first half.
The first team in World Cup history to score twice in first half injury time. Sorry, just, I know you were desperate to say that, but I mean, if it was going to happen, maybe in the 10-minute vast planes of this World Cup.
Right. Well, then the second half gets underway, and what's this? Another Serbia goal, and what a goal, by the way.
I mean, start to finish. So Tadic robs, I think, Kongla in the middle of the park, plays it to Mitrovic. And I think after that, it's all about Mitrovic. Mitrovic goes with the ball, defenders backtracking, slips it wide to Kostic, and then Mitrovic just keeps going, and the line of Cameroon defenders keep getting pushed back, so there's a huge gap in front of them. So Serbia play it across, Serbia play it back to Mitrovic, he taps it in. Again, questions for the goalkeeper whether he should be rushing out, I think, to meet Živković or not, but it was like they were playing around cones. Yeah. It was such a geometrically beautiful constructed goal, and I think for me this is the goal of the tournament.
Wow, 3-1, because there were some other... There was another goal coming up that a lot of people got very excited about. But anyway, 3-1. At this point, Cameroon look absolutely done. There's a bit of bickering going on the bench. They're heading for their ninth straight World Cup defeat. They would be out of the competition unless they can somehow turn it around. And what does Rigobert Song do? He brings on...
Abubakar. Yeah. And then...
Did that work out particularly well?
Wow. Reader, he scored one of them, I would say, the most memorable goal of this World Cup so far.
Really?
Yeah, just very rare thing. I'm trying to think, I mean, obviously Karol Poborski did it in Euro 96, but so yeah, he breaks through and then he's right in front of the keeper. And I mean, you could do a step over and go round him, but he attempts the scoop shot, relatively rare, gets incredible vertical lift, so much so that when it bounces down on the goal line, it almost goes over. It kind of hits the roof of the net as well. So aesthetically beautiful.
Yeah.
But
He doesn't believe he scored. Did you see his reaction? I think there was a moment in that build-up where everyone kind of went, he's offside.
Mm. Well, so this was the suggestion that he only tried that audacious shot because he thought it doesn't matter. This is a free shot because they're going to put the flag up anyway. And they did put the flag up, but then on review, they said, no, that was absolutely fine. Justin writes in and says, after Abubakar's goal, will commentators stop complaining about assistant referees keeping their flag down? Which is, of course, the entire rationale for them not doing it in the VAR age, because if it subsequently proved to be wrong, then at least they haven't interrupted play.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, that is essentially why they do it, and we would have been robbed of that goal. Mm. Yeah, it was amazing.
But also with that VAR, it's these fine margins, because these were precisely the margins by which, say, Argentina got caught offside all those times against Saudi Arabia. So maybe I think it's certainly a little bit of luck, because I don't think Abubakar can see that. I think it's Milenkovic on the far side who's playing him on. He cannot see that. So I think time is run, of course, to perfection. Maybe he can feel it with his sixth sense. But helped him again a few minutes later.
Okay, yeah, because he wasn't done, was he, Duncan?
Yeah, just 3 minutes later. We do have these, you know, bursts of goals at this World Cup, which is quite interesting. I think, you know, there's often the most dangerous time is when you've scored, but it seems to be flipped around in this World Cup. It's like it's even more dangerous for you when you just let one in. But yeah, Abubakar breaks through again and then plays a ball across the penalty box for everyone's favourite Champions League superstar, Eric Choupo-Moting, to knock home, to make it 3-3. And, you know, we've suffered through a lot of fairly low-scoring games, and I think to get a 3-3 was delightful.
It was a treat, wasn't it, Sasha?
I was wondering, actually, looking at that, because just as Abubakar came on, Strahinja Pavlović was actually struggling with injury. He was withdrawn a minute later. So I wonder whether Song saw that the defender was struggling and decided to put someone on right again, up against him. But also I think the second effect of that is a new defender comes on, the line isn't what it should be. So perhaps it's actually great management from Song exploiting immediately that situation that he saw unfold in front of him.
Meanwhile, was that Serbia blowing qualification? They were 3-1 up against the Cameroon side that does nothing but lose at World Cups and seemed to be kind of falling apart with internal strife.
Well, I think it changes the equation for Serbia for what they have to do in the final game. They still need the result against Switzerland, but now, if they, say, battered Cameroon, they would have just needed a draw. Now they need to beat Switzerland, which in a way could actually make things simpler in everyone's mind in the way that they approach the game. And I think certainly if you look at today's match, they were up against Cameroon, not Brazil, but I think with Kostic there's a lot more thought to what they were doing. They seemed to tie it towards the end, but then, interesting, they kept on finding a lot of space towards the end of the match. So I think it's going to be an interesting clash of styles. I mean, we saw that Switzerland can defend absolutely superbly, and they only need a draw, and Serbia need to unlock that defense. So, yeah, maybe it's going to be quite not the most fun of watches, but I think it's certainly going to be a very intriguing match. And obviously, there is a backstory to this as well, 2018 World Cup. I think Albanian players from Switzerland basically making the game for Switzerland against Serbia. It's very much celebrating politically, shall we say. And I think Serbia have held on to their grudge.
One of three very highly charged matchups that we've got awaiting us this week, because there's that one. There's also, as we heard before, Ghana-Uruguay, because South Africa 2010 and all that. And also USA-Iran, which just happens to be coming up on Tuesday. We'll talk about that next.
We're all driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. You can use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. According to their own survey, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites. Remember the last time you were hiring and how slow and overwhelming it was? Well, you don't need to go through all that again. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent. And because you listen to The Totally Football Show, Indeed is going to give you a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/totally. That's Indeed.com/totally. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed at Indeed.com.
Incredible game. When they play with a false nine, it changes everything.
A false nine, eh? What's that then?
Well, it's you know, it's what he's a nine, but he's not really a nine in the area, and Sorry, I just got to take that. Urgent football question? Call the Athletic Emergency Football Hotline. 0800 433 433. News, insights, analysis. The Athletic. Know the game. Love the game.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, smart speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is The Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Tuesday at the World Cup. Woohoo! It's the make or break, in or out, go big or go home, final round of group stage games for A and B on Tuesday. What's coming up in Group A? Well, 3 o'clock UK time, Netherlands play Qatar. Netherlands need a point to seal their place in the knockout rounds. Qatar already out. Ecuador, at the same time, will be facing Senegal. Senegal have to win to advance. For Ecuador, a draw will be enough. In Group B, meanwhile, Wales take on England. England could go through even if they lose that game. Wales might not make it even if they win. And the other game in that group, which will also be at 7 o'clock in the evening UK time, is Iran against USA, which is, I think, legitimately massive. Firstly, because it's, well, Iran and USA. And secondly, because it could turn out to be pretty much a playoff for the last 16. Iran second in the group, a point ahead of their opponents, USA. USA thus need a win to go through to the last 16. A draw might be enough for the Persians. We're going to hear views now on both sides of Tuesday's big matchup. First of all, on the US MNT, here's Sam Stayskull.
England was huge, but this is effectively more huger.
Yeah, I mean, it's a knockout game for the US. They have to win. If they don't, they go home. If they win, they're through. Very simple scenario. And yeah, so they're getting their knockout round started early here in Qatar.
The England performance by the US team, it showed a young side kind of growing game by game, still yet to concede from open play as well. But now, after two draws, you really need a win.
Yeah, and you know, I think one of the main stories, there were a few main stories for me from Friday. One was that the US performed really well in a lot of different areas on the field, had a little bit of a tactical tweak with what they did with their midfield, and everybody, I thought, acquitted themselves really nicely. Having said that, they weren't able to score a goal, which has been a trouble spot for them for a long time now, not just here in Qatar. And it sort of drove home to me, watching the Wales-Iran match earlier in the day on Friday, how much of an opportunity the U.S. missed in the opener to get all 3 points. Had they won that match, gotten the point against England, they're sitting in great shape right now, where they just need a draw to go through. Instead, you know, they gave up the late equalizer, they weren't able to capitalize on some of the chances they had earlier in the match, and now they're in a position where they need a win against an Iran team that is going to be fighting tooth and nail to prevent that from happening.
Sure, an Iran team that also looked a lot better in their second game, beating Wales 2-0 with those late goals. Sam, the US flourished against an England side that were pretty open, gave them some room to play into. Iran probably not going to be quite as expansive. You might need someone to do something special to open this up. Who do you think needs to step up?
I mean, Christian Pulisic has historically been the guy for the US to do it in the big moments. I thought he was actually pretty good against England, and I thought he had some good moments against Wales too. But he tends to fade in and out of games at times. I'm certainly looking for him to have a big performance. Gio Reyna is a guy that can break a game open in a single moment. Tim Weah, I think, has been quite good so far this tournament. And then we'll see what happens at striker, because the U.S. hasn't really gotten anything out of that position, not just at this tournament, but really, I mean, since before the start of qualifying last September. It's long been a trouble spot for them, and I'm really curious if Berhalter decides to not play one of his three traditional strikers on the roster and instead move Reyna or maybe Weah into that number nine position and get an extra, better, more talented attacker on the field.
Okay. The last time these two teams met in a World Cup was 1998, and it was described as the mother of all games. It's got its own Wikipedia page, although to be fair, it's actually quite a boring one. But does this game carry much of the kind of whole feeling and baggage that fixture had?
Maybe not quite as much, but the baggage, I would say, has increased over the last 24, 48 hours. So U.S. Soccer, on Saturday, they tweeted out a picture of the Group B standings. On that picture were the flags of the four teams in Group B. The Iran flag, however, had been edited, so they have the Islamic Republic emblem in the middle of that flag. U.S. soccer took it off in this graphic that they put out on their social media. That caused a pretty big controversy. Iran planned to lodge a complaint with FIFA. U.S. soccer ended up deleting the tweets. They said that they had done it to show support for women in Iran fighting for basic human rights. But, you know, the players and the coaches and the technical staff were not consulted or informed of this decision ahead of time. It was also just a bit bizarre because it's great to show support for the women in Iran as they're fighting for their rights right now. And obviously there's, you know, really serious things going on in that country, far more serious than a World Cup. But to do it in a way where it's like just on a graphic and it's a little tiny flag as part of a larger design and people may or may not even notice, it seemed strange. And then to go back and delete it after people started noticing made me think that this whole thing was not very thought out and sort of sloppy. So that's added to the storyline here a bit in a way that, at least on the field, could have some negative implications for the U.S.
You might be all right. Jürgen Klinsmann might have taken the heat off you.
Perhaps. Although, you know, this news cycle, how fast it's going, they may have already forgot about Jürgen and moved on to the U.S., so... we'll see how it goes, but yeah.
Let's hope the thinking's a little bit more joined up on the field then, Sam. Thank you very much, and look forward to speaking to you soon.
Thanks so much, guys.
Sam Stayskull. There's loads of coverage of the USMNT's build-up over at theathletic.com. Meanwhile, though, what of Iran? Iran, who were beaten 6-2 by England in their opening game, but bounce back with that remarkable finale and a 2-0 victory over Wales. 98th minute, they got the first of their goals. Basil McDaddy joins us now to tell us how that leaves the Iran team. All right, 98th minute against Wales. Most dramatic moment of the World Cup to that point, I would say. How was it for you?
I mean, it was stressful. Stressful, I think, stressful for 85 million Iranians who were watching that. It just looked like Iran wasn't going to get the goal, even with the man advantage. I have to say that the way the match unfolded, they sort of weren't their best in the opening 20 minutes or so. Kiefer Moore had that chance. They grew into the match in the second half. They did create a lot of chances, but the one thing that stood out to me was, you know, Mehdi Taremi kept having these chances from like 30 yards out with the Welsh defenders backing up. And, you know, I felt like me and everybody else watching that match was just begging him to shoot, and he never shot. And then, you know, on comes Chesney, and you're thinking, what? Why is he coming on? And he does do exactly what the Iranian fans were begging Taremi to do. He takes that shot from outside of the box that was there and just buries it in the corner. And just, you know, pure elation and a great match. I think one of the matches that sort of symbolizes the World Cup. Two teams that don't really meet each other quite often coming together and playing what I think was a really, really good match despite it being 0-0 for, you know, 90-odd minutes.
Yeah, Chesney, who'd been taken off in the first game against England, which obviously didn't go well for him, or for Team Melli either. What was the big difference, do you think, between those two performances?
I do think that England were great in the first game. You can't really take that away from them. But one of the things that I think gets overlooked is the role of a goalkeeper in the work that the goalkeeper needs to do, aside from just saving shots. You know, a goalkeeper, especially when you play the type of low block defensive plan that Iran aimed to play in that first game, a goalkeeper is really kind of like the central nervous system for that back line and even for the players that are in further afield, right? So I do think the Berenvand injury was a big blow to Iran. I mean, I don't know if listeners to this podcast believe in the expected goal stat, but I think the expected goals for England was just under 3. And look, I also think that there is a gulf in quality between England and the other teams in the group. No disrespect to Wales or the US or even Iran. I thought England just approached that game really well. They smelled blood in the water, the Berhanvand injury, and just a combination of factors. And I do think people also overlook the fact that Iran didn't give up. Yeah, they gave up six goals. They did score twice, though, and I think they used that as sort of a platform to regroup and get a crucial 3 points against Wales.
Okay, so for the second World Cup in a row, it comes down to the final group game for Iran. Last World Cup, 2018, really desperate final moments in that draw with Portugal. So much drama there. Ronaldo with a penalty, saved by Berhanvand. And then Iran with a penalty in the 93rd minute and the late attempts to try and get the goal that would have taken you through. Is Iran ready to go through all of that again?
I think they are. I think this is just what this team is about. If you kind of look at the sidelines when the breakthrough came to be and then the second goal went in, it was just sort of like a weight was lifted off of the shoulders of every player. Obviously, we've touched upon just everything that's going around this Iranian team outside of football. And it seems that more and more pressure is being put on them, you know, whether it's journalists asking questions that Carlos Queiroz deems unfair, whether it's Jürgen Klinsmann in the analysis box for BBC saying things that, you know, I think are kind of unkind towards the Iranian team and Carlos Queiroz. I think they are ready to take this match with by their own hands and get the point. I mean, keep in mind that they only need a point. The U.S. needs to win here. And if it does unfold like it did against Portugal 4 years ago, I think everybody would take that because that would mean, not as long as England doesn't lose to Wales, Iran are guaranteed a place in the knockout round for the first time in their history. So I do feel that getting those crucial 3 points against Wales in the fashion that they did has set this team up for potential success on Tuesday.
All right. Potentially the first ever appearance in the knockout stages. Brilliant. Basil, thank you so much.
Thanks, Jimbo.
Basil McDaddy. Oh, this game's going to be amazing, isn't it? 7 o'clock UK time, 10 o'clock in Qatar. So it's a late one. You're going to be watching that? Or over on the other side, Wales, England, Duncan?
I mean, dual it up, surely.
Yeah, dual screens?
Yeah, big time, yeah. I mean, obviously the 98 World Cup, Iran knocked USA out. It was Roy Wegerle's first and last start in a World Cup game. So fans of silky mid-90s footballers should rejoice.
Top Roy Wegerle content, good. Meantime, on the other side, at 7 o'clock, as they both are, Wales against England. No Wayne Hennessy for Wales, so Danny Ward will be stepping in, Sasha.
Perhaps might be a bit of a redemption from him. If you maybe consider his first few minutes for Wales, like his first few games for Leicester, you can maybe label him as luckless. Danny Ward comes on, concedes two goals, even though, you know, it wasn't really his problem because the Wales team in front of him played like they were three men down, not one, in those closing stages. So it could be a bit of a redemption for him. But to me, given Wales' performances so far and, you know, Bale and Ramsey were so disappointing in the previous match, maybe it feels a little bit like a FA Cup third round game, kind of Premier League against Championship. Wow. And I don't think I'm being too harsh on Wales here because at this tournament, Wales have performed for maybe one half out of four so far. And yeah, the previous match was fairly discouraging stuff.
We've seen some teams pull enormous upsets out of nowhere, though, in these opening games. So, you know, you can't rule it out. England, by no means sure, are going through yet. They're on 4 points. Iran, a point behind them, with USA on 2 points, and Wales bringing up the rear on just the one.
I mean, it's a World Cup of certain teams relying on, you know, elderly statesmen forwards. We saw it tonight with Ronaldo for Portugal and Cavani, and then Suarez came on. But I think of all those sort of teams, Wales, as Sasha was saying, they look the most disjointed, you know. Bale against the USA was so isolated in that match. And then again, you know, he's played the whole game in both matches and he's had the fewest touches in both games of players that have played the whole game. I mean, it's just, now I know that almost certainly means he's going to pop up with some sort of overhead kick against England, but it feels like one tournament too far for Wales. For England, I think, obviously everyone's talking about Phil Foden incessantly, but it's the other changes, because obviously 4 years ago, England were already through with two wins out of two, so Southgate pretty much gave, you know, hey squad, who wants a game, you know, at the World Cup sort of thing. He can't obviously do that this time, but I do think maybe some more changes than just Phil Foden, because England are pretty much through. So
yeah, they weren't, but I'm just looking at it now.
So then it's still 4-0.
Even with a defeat, they can go through.
I mean, if England lose by 4 goals to Wales, they should not only leave this World Cup, but refuse to come to at least the next 3, I would say.
Bold words, Duncan. That's at 7 o'clock anyway with the USA-Iran game. And earlier on, 3 o'clock, there's Netherlands, Qatar and Ecuador-Senegal. Of course, Totally at the World Cup will be along on Tuesday night with our thoughts on how those games pan out. Dramatic. So do make sure you join us for that. For the meanwhile, that brings us to the end of today's show. So many thanks to Duncan and to Sasha and to Basil and Sam and, of course, Carl. And producer Charlie, and listener, you have a great day, and we'll catch up with you next time.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Listen ad-free on the Athletic app, discover bonus video content by searching for The Totally Football Show on YouTube, and see the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally. The Totally Football Show is an Athletic Media Company production and sponsored by LiveScoreBet. Get the latest football betting odds at LiveScoreBet.com. It's over 18s only. Please bet responsibly and be gambleaware.org.
The Athletic.